I am Paul Harris. Ian Geis and Dan Strauss here in the studio with me. And now news director Colin Jeffrey puts on his alter ego outfit and becomes Showbiz Boy for the Showbiz segment of the show where we do movie reviews. And I guess this week we got to do our Oscar picks because the Oscars are on ABC on Sunday night.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Before we get to all of that stuff, I have one other Showbiz-related thing I'd like to mention. And that is a recommendation that you go to the Fox sometime in the next week and see a show called Beautiful. I saw this show on Broadway last fall when I went to visit my daughter, and we went to see the show. It's about Carole King, the great singer-songwriter, who started out in the 60s writing with Jerry Goffin, who was her husband. The two of them wrote a lot of classic songs together, and then, of course, she had a solo career, the high point of which was her album Tapestry in, what do you think, Dan, 70, 71?
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
One of the biggest selling solo albums by a woman of all time. And this show is essentially about her story. And it includes not only songs by Carole King and Jerry Goffin and by Carole King herself, but also by Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, who were the songwriting duo who had the office next to theirs. And they wrote a few, oh, small songs you might have heard of, like You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling, which for a while was the most recorded non-Beatles song in the world. It is wonderful. The production is wonderful. I saw it in New York, and I took my wife to see it Tuesday because she hadn't had a chance to see it. We went to opening night at the Fox, and the show here, the bus and truck version that's at the Fox now, is just as good as the Broadway show. Looks exactly the same. In fact, the woman who created the Carole King role on Broadway and played her first was named Jessie Mueller. She won a Tony Award for that. When I saw it, she had just left the show, and another woman named Chelina Kennedy had taken over. She was great. Now, it's here at the Fox with Jessie Mueller's sister, Abby, playing the Carole King role. And she's great. So when you go see this show, you're going to really have first-class entertainment, and I strongly advise you to get tickets and go to the Fox. It's only going to be there through next weekend, but it is really a terrific show. It's called Beautiful. All right, enough about the theater. What about the movies? What's opening this weekend, Colin?
Well, the one I reviewed is 999. There's also Gods of Egypt that's opening, if you want to see that. And then there's, what was the one you might have seen?
I saw Eddie the Eagle.
Eddie the Eagle.
Let's start with the one that you saw, 999.
Fair enough. We'll start there. 999 is a crime thriller. It centers around a group of cops and a group of thieves. Some of the cops are bad, and they are part of a group of thieves. And our main cop, who is sort of, we find out very early on, is not a bad guy, is Casey Affleck. And it's him trying to navigate bringing down this group of thieves while the thieves simultaneously are trying to steal stuff. 999 comes from, I guess, the police code for officer down. And so that's all I'm going to say about that.
Oh, see, I thought it was the English 911. Because, you know, if you're in England and you need 911, you need emergency service, here we dial 911. They dial 999. That's what I thought the 999 was.
No.
Does this take place in England or here?
No, I think L.A., I believe.
Okay.
Or no, Atlanta. Sorry, Atlanta. Takes place in Atlanta. It actually opens with a really well-shot, well-conceived bank heist. And it does a good job of showing they're going for something specific. It provides direction and sort of a laser-like focus. They are going after this one safety deposit box. And then the movie goes in 1,000 different directions. It starts out, which just says, oh, wow, this is going to be really tight, and it's well thought out. They're very precise, and everything that happens in that first sequence, there's a definite cause and effect, and it's very nicely laid out. And then it just gets messy because they're trying to pack in too many crosses, double crosses, secret agents, and perhaps rising above all of it is sort of the man that spearheads these heists, is a professional robber, I guess, maybe an arms dealer, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and he is getting these things for some reason for a group of, I guess they're Israeli, but then they're also Russian mobsters. This is, again, where it gets a little muddled. Played the heavy there. The leader of that is played by Kate Winslet.
All right, let me just stop you right now. Those are some pretty good people who are in this movie.
Casey, oh, my gosh.
Affleck and Chiwetel Ejiofor and Kate Winslet. and I'm listening to you do this, and you and I have been doing this for a few years now, I've never heard you have so much difficulty describing a plot, and it's not that you're trying not to give stuff away. You sound like you were genuinely confused during this movie.
I am, and it really sets it up, because that first scene, which it was very tightly shot. Like, everything was good about it. I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. Mm-hmm. It felt visceral, and it was brutal, but never outrageously so to start. And then there was never motivation given. Well, I can't get behind people if there's no motivation. Like, he's doing this for someone. I don't know why, though. I saw it. It's just, I don't understand why he's in league with these people. Mm-hmm. And then it really just... So if you have not seen The Departed, you should. But if you have seen The Departed, there's a moment near the end of the movie where a pair of elevator doors open, and there's a big surprise.
Yep.
That's all I really want to say about it. That's a great moment in that movie, because it catches you off guard.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps we didn't feel it coming. It wasn't set up that way. You had no idea what was going to happen there.
Mm-hmm.
This, you can tell, they're setting up every time for that elevator moment.
They telegraph it, huh?
It loses its punch every time you see that. So the good things about the movie are that when there's action and tension, it's shot very, very well. You're tense. But everything else is just kind of bland. I'm not someone who really ever shies away from graphic violence, or even graphic sexuality doesn't bother me in this. There's a scene in which they're in a strip club that they had to use shadows to such an extent that, first of all, I don't know how you could see your way through there, but they were using shadows to cover parts on women and activities that were happening. And it was tasteless the way it was done. It was just like, oh, you're trying to get away with showing us as much as you possibly could. And so it just had all of these sort of, every time they did something well, it seemed like they took a couple of steps back. Mm. But the full cast, I'm going to read to you the people associated with this. Chiwetel Ejiofor, Casey Affleck, Anthony Mackie, Woody Harrelson, Aaron Paul, Kate Winslet, Gal Gadot, and Norman Reedus.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all A-list or right there actors. I don't know what they saw in this. Because it just, by the time you get to the end of it, it becomes muddled, it feels unnecessary, and there is gore that goes beyond, like, bullets can't do this to people. That's the best way I can think to say it. Like, it goes, you know those old movies when someone gets shot and they fly back 20 feet?
Yeah.
Well, they finally moved away from that. Well, now this said, oh, yeah, these bullets, I guess people are made of explosives, because they get hit with a bullet, and
their body goes all
exactly.
over the place.
And Kate Winslet needs to stop doing accents altogether. She, American, British, fine, everything else, stop it.
Well, she was very good with the accent in the Steve Jobs movie.
For three-quarters of it, and then it just sort of vanished.
Well, that's true.
And then this, she has an accent... I would not have been able to place it. Like, it's definitely an accent.
I know there's something about you. You're from another land. I don't know which one it is.
And then they told me, oh, she's Israeli. And I'm like, I guess. Sure. If that's what we're saying. And it's not consistent. So it's very frustrating, because it seemed like it was going to be a fun sort of caper / noir thriller, trying to... Casey Affleck pick his way through this difficult situation, but it just left me wanting a lot more from it. Mm. I give it a 4 out of 10.
You know, that would make two bad Casey Affleck movies in the same month, because he was in that movie The Finest Hours, the one about the Coast Guard rescue.
Yes, he was.
He's not a bad actor. He's just making bad choices.
Yeah, and this is not the fault of any of the actors, I would say. Anthony Mackie is... really, really good in it. Casey Affleck just sort of, I've now figured out, when he's not quite certain how to act, he just kind of mumbles.
Mm.
He just mumbles through everything.
That's not
and
good.
No. Yeah. And so, you know.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
Four out of 10.
Four out of 10 for 999. That's the name of the movie Colin was reviewing. The movie I have for you is called Eddie the Eagle. This is about a guy named Eddie Edwards, who actually was the guest on John Carney's show just a couple of hours ago. In 1988, at the Winter Olympics in Calgary, there was one British ski jumper. England, not so much known for the snow. So learning how to be a ski jumper in England, something that hadn't been done at that point for over 50 years. England had never had a ski jumper for 50 years before that in the Olympics. Well, Eddie couldn't make it onto the national ski team, and so he decided, well, I'll just learn ski jumping. How hard can that be? After all you got to do is go down the hill and jump and land. How hard can that be? Well, here's how what made Eddie the Eagle a folk legend. He doesn't look like an athlete at all. And at the end of the movie, you actually see pictures of the real Eddie the Eagle. He's played in the movie by an actor named Taron Egerton. But you see real pictures of him at the end of the movie during the credits. And I forgot, this guy had Coke bottle lenses. Does anybody know what that means anymore?
Oh, yeah. Really thick lenses.
But nobody has those Coke bottles anymore.
Not anymore.
Are you talking about? He had 2-liter bottles on his face, Paul? No.
Yeah.
But really, really thick glasses. And he kind of looked nerdish and goofy, and here he was among the Olympians, the athletes who were in the best shape of their lives, who were doing incredible things on ice and on snow and on the ski jump. Well, he decided he wanted to do this, and so he went and trained and got a guy who had been a former ski jumper, who in the movie is played by Hugh Jackman, who's one of only two people in the movie you will recognize, unless you're a huge Taron Egerton fan.
If you saw The Kingsman or Legend or late last year.
Wait a second, was he the young guy in Kingsman?
He's the young guy in Kingsman, yes.
I take it back, okay.
And he's a bit player in Legend that had Tom Hardy playing twins.
Okay.
So.
Well, he's very good in the role, and the character, you're immediately sympathetic to this character, for reasons I'm not going to reveal here. I don't want to give too much away about this movie. But I will tell you that, do you remember a movie called Cool Runnings, which was about the Jamaican bobsled team?
Yeah, with John Candy.
With John Candy as their coach. And the idea of that movie was, look, we know we may not be the best bobsled team in the world, but our country has never had a bobsled team, and so we're going to go there, and we're going to go to the Olympics, where an important part of being there is the fact that you're just there. Mm-hmm. The fact that you are an Olympian. That the Olympics are not just about winning, they're about participating and trying to do as best you can. Well, that was exactly the attitude that this guy, Eddie the Eagle, had. And the movie follows through on that. You see him going through his training. You see him taking falls. You see him succeeding on some of his jumps. And it's a feel-good movie, because it's a feel-good story of an underdog who's trying to go out there against the best in the world. And at one point, there's a great line, which I'm not going to ruin for you, but Eddie has to remind the Olympic officials that the Olympics were originally supposed to be for amateurs, not the pros who are out there now in every sport who have super sponsors and all that. In 1988, it wasn't nearly what it is now, and this is another Olympic year in 2016. But he has to remind them, look, I'm an amateur. That's what the Olympics are supposed to be about. I will tell you, this is a good movie to take kids to. It's inspirational. It is a good lesson in, look, if you really want to do something, you've got to just try. Don't let people tell you you can't do something. Go out there and keep trying and prove them wrong, which was essentially what Eddie the Eagle's real-life story was like. One caveat on the Bring the Kids thing, there is one moment where Taron Egerton, as Eddie the Eagle, is having a conversation with Hugh Jackman, who is his coach, and there's a discussion of Bo Derek and lusting after Bo Derek, who, of course, was super hot in the 1980s because of the movie 10. Mm-hmm. And they even used some of the song Bolero, Ravel's Bolero, that was made famous again by that movie. It's in there. It's not incredibly uncomfortable, but if you were going to take your kids and they're 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, you might just have a little twinge where you go, hope they don't ask me about that later on. Again, there's no nudity. You don't see a picture of Bo Derek. It's just a quick conversation, lasts about 90 seconds. Seemed a little bit out of place in the middle of this movie. But the rest of it, absolutely, this is good family entertainment. It's called Eddie the Eagle. I give it a 7 out of 10.
And the guy when John Carney was talking to him, to the real Eddie, he said that they got it all right.
Yeah.
He said everything was right. Yeah, he said it was really well done.
There is one shot in this movie. I don't have a fear of heights. I got no problem going to the top of a tall building. I've been on the top of mountains. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But there is one shot in this movie where the camera's on Eddie's face as he's sitting at the top of the ski jump, the big professional
big hill.
Olympic hill. And then the camera rotates around him, and you see things from his point of view, looking down as he's about to go down there and take off of that jump. And there's the crowd in the background, and I don't care who you are, you feel it. You mm-hmm. gulp. You feel your heart in your chest pounding with excitement as this guy's about to go. And that's the mark of a good movie. I said the same thing about The Walk. Remember that movie that came out last year about Philippe Petit doing the high wire act between the two towers of the World Trade Center back in the 1970s? And there was that same thing that Robert Zemeckis, the director, used for that, where he rotates up from above and you can see him 110 stories above the earth, and you go... There's that same moment in this from the top of that hill, because you know that once he pushes off from that bench, there's no stopping. There's no bailing out.
It's not a pull-off ramp.
Unless you're going to be the agony of defeat guy from Wide World of Sports.
Oh, my goodness. That poor guy.
There is not going to be any escape from this. And I recommend it. It's not a great movie by any means, but it's a good underdog, good family sports movie, Eddie the Eagle. Well, right in line with Cool Runnings.
That's nice to hear, because I haven't seen really a good movie.
Oh, you can definitely take your daughter to see this one.
But I haven't seen a good movie really this month, so it's nice. I've had to sit through a bunch of stinkers so far.
Well, we're moving out of February.
Hooray!
Which you and I agree is the worst month of the year. I'm just looking at the calendar. Next weekend, they've got Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which is the Tina Fey war movie. You've got Zootopia, which is the new Disney movie. And then you've got London Has Fallen, the new Gerard Butler sequel to
Olympus Has Fallen,
big action movie. So maybe things pick up next weekend with those three.
I have seen Zootopia. I will have that next week, and I will likely see London Has Fallen, because I don't think I could drag you to that. So
is that Tina Fey movie? Is that supposed to be a comedy? It didn't look like
a comedy.
I think it's a dark comedy, which means it's not played like Sisters was for big laughs.
Yeah. I think the book it was based off was called 4-10-4. Because she said, oh, I'm a 4 in America. I go over there to cover. I'm a 10. And I come back and I'm a 4 again.
She's a 10 in Afghanistan.
She's a 10 in Afghanistan. Yeah. And so, yes, I believe they replay that scene with Margot Robbie, I think, is who stars as the attractive female reporter opposite Tina Fey.
10, 10, 10.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
based on a true story by an actual female war correspondent. I'm looking forward to seeing that next weekend. I have one other movie to recommend for you today. It's the new Michael Moore movie, Where to Invade Next. And I know that those two words, Michael Moore, make a lot of people go, ew! But I'm just going to tell you that this movie says some very interesting things, not about America, but about other countries that took ideas from America and then made them better. For instance, at the beginning of the movie, he's in Italy, and he's talking to people who own businesses there, like the guy who owns the Ducati motorcycle factory. And he's asking them, you know, I understand that in Italy, people here get at least 4 weeks vacation, sometimes as much as 8 weeks of vacation. And the owner of the company says, oh, yes, we feel that's very important. We know that if we have our happy employees and they're rested and they have time to spend with their families, they go home for a two-hour lunch every day. I know that if I can keep my people happy like that, then the company's going to do better and our product is going to be better. He goes to France to an elementary school where the kids are being served essentially gourmet food on real plates with real glasses. Where do you find that in America? I don't think a private school in this area would have something like that. He goes to Finland where they have banned homework. I can tell you that when my daughter was in middle school and in high school, mm-hmm. and she was carrying that backpack with 70 pounds of books in it.
I know.
To and from school every day and having to do 2, 3, 4 hours of homework every single day.
And math homework you couldn't help her with.
That's correct. Well, a lot of it, once she got into 11th grade, I was done.
Oh, yeah.
But it always amazed me that these kids were hit with that. Finland used to have one of the lowest rankings in the world when it comes to education. Then they eliminated homework and gave the students more autonomy. Now they're number one in the world.
Wow.
The kids have become better students and the schools have gotten better. He goes to Slovenia, where college is free for everybody, even if you're not Slovenian. There are American kids who can't afford to go to school here. They're going to Slovenia. Even though they're not from there, they're getting a free college education in Slovenia.
Wow.
I never knew about. How about this one? He also goes to Portugal. No one in Portugal has been arrested for drugs in this century.
Wow.
So more than 15 years, they've not arrested anybody for any drugs. If somebody does get into trouble with drugs, they have drug treatment instead of jail. So what's happened? Drug abuse way down, crime rate way down. Imagine if we did that in this country. Would it work here? I don't know. Now, a lot of the country he goes to are a lot more homogeneous than our country. There's not as much diversity. They're all much smaller. You know, they might have 30, 40 million. I think Italy has 80 million. We have four times that in this country. So it's a different problem to handle. But he brings up some interesting thing. And my favorite is when he goes to Iceland, where they had a bank crisis at the same time we did, even bigger than ours. They only had four banks. Iceland's not a big country. They had four national banks in Iceland. Three of them went under and had to be bailed out. The fourth one that didn't was the only one run by women. So, I mean, there's some really interesting stuff in there. And in each of those countries, the people there say, you know, we took these ideas from America. You guys led us in this. And we did. And Michael Moore is there saying, okay, if you don't mind, I'm going to take them back. We'd like to take some of those back and try them here. Mm-hmm. It's called Where to Invade Next. It's not war footage or anything like that. I give it a 9 out of 10 just because it's so interesting and funny in many scenes. There are times where you can't help yourself but laugh at what they did with our ideas and made them so much better.
I like the free college idea.
Yeah, I know. You and I, both with daughters in college, can definitely agree on that. Colin, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll do our Oscar predictions for Sunday night.
Sounds good.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. All right, so back to the showbiz stuff now. The Academy Awards are going to be on Sunday night. And before we get to our picks, I'm curious what you think of two things that are going to be on there on Sunday night, Colin. Mm-hmm. One is that they've asked the people who win awards to not take out a piece of paper. And I'd like to thank my agent. I'd like to thank my hairdresser. I'd like to thank my valet car guy. You know, that long list that they always have. Instead, the producers this year have told all of the nominees, look, if you get up there, before you go, give us a list of those people, and we'll put a scroll down at the bottom. You know, like the scroll that you get on the cable news channels?
Oh, wow.
We'll scroll those names across the bottom so you don't forget anybody. You have time to think of it ahead of time. Get that to us, and we'll put that on there. And then you can give an actual speech about, oh, I don't know, the movie or your cause or whatever it is.
Yeah.
What do you think of that idea?
I think it's always great when you can automate thanks, you know, when you can make it as insincere as possible. I think that's a great way to go about showing gratitude.
Yes. But why did
I missed my name!
Yeah.
Is it on the DVR? No, I changed channels for a minute. No. And I think that's a horrible idea. Do I love sitting and listening to? I want to thank my first agent and my second agent for getting me away from my first agent. No, I don't. But it's a thank you. I mean, we've all heard really, really bad acceptance speeches. Some of these people are better off just saying thank you.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't have a problem with it. I mean, what do you do if you're petrified and don't really have anything? You get up there and you're like, I'm going to stand up here for 15 seconds while you read. I'll hum a song to you. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think that those names can probably go while the people are moving up to the stage, because that always takes 15 or 20 seconds, particularly the people who are in the technical categories.
Oh.
You know, best sound editing. We know you're in row 300. Could you hustle up here so we can get to you so that we can bring out Jennifer Lawrence to present the next award? Well, now they could just put the thank you notes on there, and then Mr. or Mrs. Sound Editor can get up there and say, you know.
But it's always cool. Their kids get to see them. They always say, and then, you know, their kids should never be up. Why don't we just move the Oscars to 2 in the afternoon so all these kids can stay
up? It is 2 in the afternoon in Hollywood where they do it.
But they're always telling their kids, oh, Jimmy, thanks a lot. You should be in bed. Well, what are you doing up? You know the speeches?
Yes, I know.
Yeah, that's what they should put at the bottom. Jimmy, go to bed.
Well, you know what? This may cut down on the number of people who have to be played off by the orchestra.
See, maybe. The other thing that would be great is if they could get a way for Kate Winslet to put all her crying down on a card. So if she wins, we don't have to see that.
All right, the other thing I got to ask you about is, you know, the Oscars So White hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as we know, of the 20 nominated performances, none of them went to people of color. And so Chris Rock is going to be the host. He obviously is going to say something about that. He was never going to hold back on that to begin with. My friend John Max is helping him write some of the stuff for Sunday night, and I've emailed John a couple of times to give me a hint. He says, you know, I can't tell you ahead of time what we're going to do, but watch and you'll enjoy. Do you think that some of the other presenters will also get up there and make a big deal about this, because they are trying to get a diverse crew of people to do the the envelope ripping?
Yes, they will say something. Yes.
Do you think that that's going to affect viewership?
Maybe this year, maybe, but who knows? I mean, I think there's been a lot of press about this. I don't know how much it's really going to turn away the core Oscar viewer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, E! Has, what, like 6 hours of red carpet pre-game coverage in advance? Yeah, pregame show. I think the Oscars are going to be all right, because it was a record-setting year for Hollywood last year. Like,
well, as
movies are as high as they've ever been right now.
As I pointed out when Jada Pinkett Smith and Spike Lee said, I'm not going to go to the Academy Awards this year, you were not invited.
Yeah. You didn't have a ticket, so I don't really care.
Right. You're not nominated for anything, so nobody cares whether you're there
or not.
Like
to say, I will not be attending the Oscars from the years 2020 to 2025, out of principle.
Okay. Let's talk about the nominees. Let's start with the big category. Unlike them, we don't have to start at the bottom and work our way up. We can start right at the top with Best Picture, and there are 8 nominees this year.
Yes.
You and I have talked about how it's a shame they couldn't find a room for Inside Out, which will probably win in the animated feature award category. I was disappointed that Trainwreck and The Walk and Trumbo and a couple of other movies weren't in there. But the 8 that are nominated are The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. What do you think is going to win?
I think The Revenant is going to win.
And I think so, too.
I wish Spotlight would win.
I agree. Spotlight was, Inside Out was my number one movie of the year. Spotlight was just slightly behind it at number 2. An important movie, and I hope it gets more people to now rent it and check it out online.
I sat down with my wife this week and watched it, and at the very end, I think her mind was blown when they scroll all of the places where they've uncovered sex abuse scandals, and it's, you know.
By priests.
It's a
pedophile
lot.
Priests.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an enormous number.
Yes.
And it's also a remarkable movie about journalism.
It is.
Probably the best one since All the Presidents.
And there's no artificial, like Argo, if you remember from, if you had that ridiculous scene at the end where the plane's like racing down the runway to beat the Iranian security forces.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. They stuck, it's like, these are newspaper people. They're not out there running for their lives. They're telling a story, and they showed that just simply.
Yeah.
And I like that.
I like the movie because it does reawaken people's awareness of what journalists can do when they're really doing journalism and not just telling you what the latest exit polls say, but also the victims of all those pedophile priests.
Yes.
An enormous number. Spotlight. Not going to win, but we think it should. And while we're at it, well, let's just jump to one of the categories that I do think is going to win in, which is Best Original Screenplay. It's up against Bridge of Spies, Ex Machina, Inside Out, and Straight Outta Compton. Is Spotlight your winner there?
Yeah, I think the only one that could win outside that would be Inside Out.
But yeah.
I think Spotlight wins that.
All right, Best Actor, Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, Matt Damon for The Martian, Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs, and Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl.
I think this might be the biggest upset if Leo doesn't win this year.
Yeah. He's a lock, right?
Yeah. He wouldn't be my pick. I would pick either Bryan Cranston or Eddie Redmayne, but he's due, I guess.
You know the obvious one that was left out here.
Who's that?
Me in Mississippi Grind.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, no, I wouldn't be in Best Actor. I'd be in Best Supporting Actor by a guy wearing a bow tie for no reason.
I got it. I got it the one year, but yeah. I didn't show.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Dan was up in the air.
Yeah.
He was upset that there weren't more producers of color.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Best Actress, you've got Kate Blanchett for Carol, Brie Larson for Room, Jennifer Lawrence for Joy, Charlotte Rampling, 45 Years, and Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn. Before you say your choice, can I just ask, why is Jennifer Lawrence even in here?
I have no idea.
Is it just because she's Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah, I think so. I have no idea why she's in
this. Have you seen any review of Joy that said, that was an amazing performance?
No, but didn't she win one award for this early on in the awards season, I thought, maybe?
I don't know.
I think
yeah,
she may
from
have...
QVC.
Yes. She won a mop.
Yeah.
Very good, Dan.
Brie Larson should win this, and I think will.
Yeah, I agree. She was fantastic in Room. Best Supporting Actor.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Bale for The Big Short, Tom Hardy for The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight, Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies. They will all lose to Sylvester Stallone for Creed. Agreed?
Yes, but I really wish Christian Bale would win, because I've watched The Big Short, and he's the ingredient, I think. You pull him out of that, and that movie doesn't work. You need him in that movie to play that sort of role, and without him, I don't think the movie works
as well. He was absolutely great in it, and as I told you when I saw that movie, I didn't know who Christian Bale was 10 years ago, but the work he's done in the last decade has just been unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So we agree that Stallone is going to win that.
Yep.
And Best Supporting Actress, you've got...
Do we have a preview of his acceptance speech?
Oh, we may.
We may?
I think so.
Let me go. Yeah. Ian, check the archives there. Do you have something?
Let me see.
Yeah, I didn't believe I could win this. Yeah, I just want to thank my mother and my dad and my... Oh, they're scrolling it. Okay. Well, that's good. see you guys later.
That was really good. That was really good. You know what? We also have, this is very interesting. I didn't know. Ian just told me about this while we were listening to the Sly Cut. We actually have Sylvester Stallone giving the acceptance speech for Christian Bale in case he wins in The Big Short.
We do.
Yeah, go ahead and play that.
Yo, this is for Christian Bale. Christian, thank you. You know, I want to thank everybody, and they're scrolling it along the thing again, too. What? Anyway. The Big Short. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, very, very good. Wait, do we have one of him doing Tom Hardy?
Yeah.
Tom Hardy for The Revenant? We do.
I used to love reading The Hardy Boys, so Tom Hardy is for you. You know, it's great. Thank you.
Wonder if we have one for Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight. Do we? We do. Go ahead. Wow. Roll on.
Anytime I was in the ring with Apollo Creed, I was getting Ruffalo'd up. So this is for Mark Ruffalo. Mark, is the stuff scrolling down there. Yo, Adrian.
It's too bad we don't have one for him in the fifth one. Oh, wait, we do?
Hashtag what? Go Adrian. That's what the
hashtag go Adrian. Look again. Well, we do. We do have it. We have Stallone accepting for Mark Rylance, who is great, by the way, in Bridge of Spies as the Soviet spy. Mm-hmm. It was very, very good. Roll the clip of Sly doing that one.
Yo, this is, I'm accepting this for Mark Rylance. Rylance, this is for you. Yeah, I have nothing else to say. Your name doesn't do anything. All your people are scrolling down the bottom.
You know what I'm looking forward to is on Sunday night when they announce the nominees and they have the boxes on the screen, they're putting up Sly's picture in every box.
I know.
And there's a pre-recorded Sly. Disappointed that Sly won.
Yeah.
Disappointed, you know.
Oh, crap. I didn't win. Oh, crap. He won.
That would be great.
Hopefully the person that does his scroll isn't spelling phonetically from how he sounds.
Oh, man, could you imagine that?
Yo, that's the right thing.
Yeah. It'll be like the one...
Inaudible yelling.
Yeah. Unintelligible yelling from last night's debate in the closed captioning. All right, Best Supporting Actress, you got Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara for Carol, Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl, Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs. I think this is probably the toughest category to choose. What do you think?
I think Alicia Vikander wins it.
Okay, it's not that tough. We agree.
Yes.
Best Director, Adam McKay for The Big Short, George Miller for Mad Max Fury Road, Alejandro Iñárritu, who won last year for Birdman, didn't he?
Yes.
He's the director of The Revenant, Lenny Abramson for Room, and Tom McCarthy for Spotlight.
I think that, George Miller wins it. That's my hope.
You're going to pick?
The dark horse here. This is, Mad Max was from a movie-making standpoint, I don't know how you do that.
So you're not picking Alejandro Iñárritu to win it, even though you pick his movie to be the best picture?
Yes.
I agree with you, actually. I'm taking George Miller for Mad Max Fury Road.
That's your bracket buster right there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's my help.
One last thing I got to mention about the Academy Awards is that Joe Biden is going to be there to introduce Lady Gaga. How does that happen?
Because he's speaking out about domestic violence, and she is singing a song that I guess is about sort of domestic violence in the LGBT community or something.
Okay.
Along those lines, and...
He's not going to have that spider crawling across her face like she did at the Grammys, is she?
No, I think she's leaving the Bowie behind. But yeah, he's speaking about the It's On Us campaign. Men, it's on us to stop domestic violence, sexual assault.
All right.
There you go.
Well, it's on us to stop this right now because that's the end of our showbiz segment for this week. The Oscars are on ABC on Sunday night. I'm Paul Harris. That's Colin Jeffrey. That's Dan Strauss. That's Sylvester Stallone. Thanks again, Sly.
You bet. See you later.
Okay. And scrolling over here in the corner is Ian Geis. All here on the Big 550 KTRS.